Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
I do my show on the Heritage Radio Network because I think it's important to talk about the impact of technology on our lives.
I do my show to reach home cooks and help them do better.
Because I love getting together with people in the industry.
I like hosting my show because, to me, it's the stories about people and their relationship to food that help make the food more interesting and more delicious.
Our hosts do their shows as a labor of love, but we still need your financial support in order to keep the lights on and keep the tape rolling. Please become a member today at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Chris Guzmi.
And I'm Mary Izette.
From Fomentabout. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
All right, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Aaron Bresnitz. We are with Renee Ray Ramirez here at Ray's Barbecue in Huntington Park.
Thank you. Pleasure having you here, guys.
Thank you for doing what you do, laboring over one of the toughest cuts of meat to get right, which is the brisket. But you do other things, but your brisket is...
That's the one that's really standing up.
For you. So you've been, not your whole life, but you've been in L.A. for almost your whole life.
Yes, I was born here in Santa Ana, and then I traveled the first couple of years, lived in El Salvador, and then came back when I was around five, lived here till I was about 9 or 10, moved back, and then back and forth, but then been living here since I was 14.
Okay. And when did you first start becoming aware of food and start wanting to make food? Was your, you know, did your mom cook? Did your dad cook? Did your grandma cook?
Yeah, I mean, everybody in the house cooked. My grandma, my aunts, my mom not necessarily, but I grew up with my grandparents most of the time, and they did cook all the time. My grandma was always the one that, guys, what do you guys want for lunch tomorrow? Because lunch was a big meal, not dinner.
Yeah, and anything that stands out as your favorite meal that you didn't know it then, but has sort of influenced your cooking now?
You know what? Definitely, I always like grilling stuff.
Yeah.
But that's about as far as it went. Grilling. And especially it was just, yeah, either chicken or your basic Hispanic carne asada. But that's as far as it went.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because there is a type of grilling barbecue in Mexican, Latin American food, but it's very different than sort of the Texas style of barbecue that you do.
Higher temperatures, yeah. Anything above 375 is considered grilling. So that's kind of like the category I would follow at that time.
Right. Now, were you the guy, like, everyone's like, oh, Ray's cooking, like, we're going over to his house?
No. To be honest with you, I was always at work. I was always busy. It was more kind of like, we have nothing better to do. Let me just throw something on the grill. But it was always a cheap grill. It was always the inexpensive supermarket $20. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know what you're doing. The one you go, hey, we're going to do a barbecue this weekend. Then you go, oh, wait, we don't have a grill.
Yes, that one.
And then you go, well, we might never use it again. So just get like the tin.
The one right in front of the cash register when you're checking out.
Yes. So you were actually in a different line of work. You were working for a phone company, but you were spending time in the Midwest.
Yes.
And is that where, I mean, where did you first fall in love with this? The slow and low, the more, you know, when you say barbecue in America, you think of like that type of traditional
yes.
type of food.
I knew barbecue here from the traditional places back in the early 90s, you know, the ones in Inglewood. But then when I got transferred out to St. Louis to go help them out, rebuild some stores, one of my buddies over there, who was my boss, took me and was like, hey, wait, let's go eat. At that time, my first place I ever tried was Casey Masterpiece, which they no longer exist.
Oh, yeah.
They went under. And for here, coming from your basic, what we thought in California at that time was Tony Romo's, it was like heaven.
Sure.
That just blew my mind away. I mean, I felt the smoke going inside. I mean, I can still remember, like, if it's today. Then on Saturdays and Fridays, we would go out to the drive around St. Louis and cross over the bridge to, you know, the
Kansas City.
Yeah. No. Well, the Kansas City came after, but we first started exploring that, and then we would cross over the to Illinois, I think it was. Just cross over the bridge. And then Mississippi, and then we would just find the little corner spots that were just there and just eat and try, okay, now let's go there, so let's go there. Then about a couple months after it, that's when we we should go to Kansas City.
We should make that Mecca.
Yeah,
we should make that
trip. It was a drive.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, from here to Frisco, I haven't been there in a while, but it was yeah. It wasn't no, like, around the block.
So, and it was a revelation.
That's when I was like, you were like in, it was just, that was in that utopia, cutopia, whatever you want to call it. Coming from LA, which you didn't know.
I mean, LA barbecue, and what year was this?
2001 to 2002.
So the barbecue scene in LA was.
No, it was.
There wasn't real, you couldn't even say a scene. There was nothing.
It's just the only ones that were around. With the ones in Inglewood.
Yeah.
And Phil's, of course.
Yeah.
Know, and, I mean, but Phil's and the ones in Inglewood are within the same barbecue style.
Yeah. And barbecue was not on the cultural map or in the mainstream at all.
No, you didn't really hear about it.
So when did you... So let me, you couldn't shake it, could you? The idea of this meat and the smoke and the tenderness.
Oh, no. I mean, I couldn't... You know, to me, it was just awesome. But when I came back, I just couldn't get it off my mind.
Yeah.
And then you're stuck here with the same old things that you left behind, and you're like, okay, well, I just gotta wait it up. But you gotta remember, back in those days, we didn't have social media, we didn't have YouTube that you could just jump in and how do I do this and how do I do that. You know, we didn't have, you know, Yelp. We didn't have none of that. So you were kind of stuck within your within your radius, and you never left that radius really to go try out something else, because what were you going to do? Open up a 900-page phone book and look into the restaurants and see the menus?
No, you weren't going to do that. Yeah. So when did you first start? What was your first experiment with, you know, the road to this barbecue, to Ray's Barbecue?
First experiment was in my it was in my garage. I had a stove in a garage that I had that I converted to propane so my wife could do some baking. And I saw a video, and I still remember the title. It was called Winter Ribs. Winter Ribs was basically from a guy who lived in Canada. I forgot his name. He's probably still on YouTube. And then he would show you how to make ribs in 3-2-1 method in your oven, because it was too snowed out outside to go make
Right,
ribs.
Right, right.
And that was my first ever ribs I ever made. And it was such a piece of cake. I just knew it. I just knew it. It's like the first, you know, minute I took him off the oven rack, and I started putting that barbecue glaze. I just knew that was it.
You just knew that was your calling.
I knew that was it. How I was going to take it further, I didn't know, but I just knew it was meant.
And what year was this?
This was, I would say, 2011.
Okay.
So wait, I mean, this all happened very recent.
Right. So 10 years of it marinating in your mind, thinking about it, and then you finally
really
put
it together. It took 10 years.
But I mean, but was it the social media and the way that you saw the changing shift in food culture and the way that people found out about restaurants? Was that sort of an encouragement?
No, what it was I had got laid off from Chase Bank.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Sometimes those types of moments are the best moments in your life.
Most definitely. I always tell people the most difficult times in your life, you find talents or passions that you didn't even know that you had them.
So you start cooking, and were you using just, like, what cuts were you using, what types of equipment? Like, because, as you mentioned, you were cooking with sort of lower-grade meat, lower-grade equipment. When did you start making that shift, or what was that revelation of, you know, like, I need quality to make quality?
Yes, pretty much as the circle went on to my friends trying it, getting more feedback at it, then I moved on to charcoal. Within charcoal, I moved on to ceramic grills, my Big Green Egg, Kamados. Then when I started to spend more money, because you got to remember, during this time I was unemployed.
Yeah.
So you can't just go and spend $800 on a Traeger.
No.
You buy the Craigslist for $150.
Which is fine.
You play with it, and then you buy another one that's on Craigslist, the next model up, and then that's when I decided... one of my friends told me, he was like, Ray, your barbecue's awesome. Why don't you sell it? And that's when that opened up Pandora's Box, which is where I'm at right now.
Is that the other name for the Pandora's Box barbecue?
Oh, yeah. You know what? It goes perfect. I'll be honest with you.
So what was that like, that moment when you first decided that you were going to sell? And also, probably not on the level either, because you just can't really... sell food.
Yeah, no. So basically, it was the early days of January 2014.
Yeah.
And it was one of my barbecue friends from a forum who told me that comment on a picture. And I asked him, I was like, what do you think I should sell? He's like, sell your pulpo sandwiches. You know, if I lived in California, I would buy it. And I asked him, how much would you even pay? He's like, I'll give you $7 for one. So, $7? Okay. So I told my wife, I was like, you know what? Let me just put an ad on Facebook. It was called the Southgate Huntington Park page. At that time, they had 10,000 followers. So I went online. I put an ad. Pulled pork sandwiches for samples on the January 17th from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. at my house. PM me for address. 6 people showed up.
Okay.
I made $60. Those 6 people told me, Ray, why don't you sell ribs? You want some ribs?
I'll make you ribs.
Yeah. Okay. You want to come back tomorrow? Yeah, I'll come back tomorrow. Okay. $18 a rack. I went down to Costco. I bought the same racks that they sell now, the St. Louis, 3 racks in one package. And I remember I would spend $25 on the package of 3, and I would, you know, times $18.
Right.
And that was my...
That's a good profit margin, by the way. For restaurants, that's a killer profit margin. Yeah,
well, it was easy to figure out because I had read somewhere online where it was like, as long as you're making 300% profit, you're good.
Yeah.
Which is, now it's, you know.
It's a little different. You got rent, different. You got employees, you got all the other stuff.
But that's how I figured it out. You know?
And so then just word of mouth.
And then that was 2 weeks after, I already had lines in my driveway because it was Super Bowl weekend.
Oh, my God. Good timing.
And this was without thinking, because remember, this was all just a joke. It wasn't...
Well, not a joke.
But I mean...
It was your passion. And
in my eyes, it wasn't going to go further.
Right. Just like a couple of friends in the neighborhood and just something on the side.
Yeah, that's what I meant by a joke. That it was just going to be around a couple of days and that's it.
So you're building up, reaching success.
So I'm building up. First day of... I was putting ads like crazy. I took photography a couple classes in college, so I would take some really nice pictures. You know, put them on Facebook. Everybody would just show up. And my friend told me I saw the ad. So I went from $60 to one day to $120 to next weekend $500 to the weekend after. By the time Super Bowl, 3 weeks after Super Bowl was here, you know, I was making like $2,000.
That's awesome.
In, I would say... 4 or 5 hours, and then it was kind of like, I like the picture as being in Vegas and, you know, just doubling down.
Yeah,
it was just doubling.
Just splitting those aces.
So I told my wife, I was like, I need to buy a bigger smoker, because at the time I had like 10-12 Traegers.
Yeah.
In my driveway, and I was like, I need to buy another smoker. She said, what are you gonna get? First, I felt comfortable using pellets, so I went to the cook shack. Right, I saw this guy that was selling a $20,000 smoker in 12. You know, being a good businessman, I told him, I'll give you 8. He's like, no, you're crazy. He calls me back 2 weeks later. I'll take the eight. Yay. He's like, if you want to bring it down, I'll give it to you. So he drove 2 hours and bring me the machine, put it in my driveway. The minute that machine was there the next day, my sales just doubled up, because now I had 3 times my capacity.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
And then I got snitched on.
Oh, all right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Listen to, I guess, you know, we'll play ex-cops as appropriate for getting snitched on. And then we'll hear about the snitching and the attempted public fundraising and then the opening of Ray's Barbecue. Ex-cops here in Snacky Tunes. We're here with Renee Ray Ramirez in Huntington Park.
Never happened. Tone down your reaction. trip we never try. Some things never happen. Tone down your reaction. I can still remember.
Okay, we are here at Ray's Barbecue with Ray himself in Huntington Park in Los Angeles. So you bought the giant smoker, doubled your business, and then you got snitched on. Do you know who snitched on you?
No, I never found out. Never.
But what, jealousy? Haters gonna hate.
But you know what? You know what? If there's one thing that I learned after that is that if they're not hating on you, that means
you're not doing a good job.
You're not doing a good job. So.
They must have seen your success and went, oh, I'm gonna. He thinks he's so good with his rack of ribs and things like that. So you're doing ribs, you're doing pulled pork. Have you dabbled with brisket yet?
No, not even in my wildest dreams. Because at that time, brisket was the unthinkable. I didn't even. It was like the most scariest thing you could ever imagine.
And why is that?
It's hard. I mean, think about it. I like to think about it as pulled pork being preschool.
Oh yeah, I mean, even I can do. I do pulled pork in my.
You can put that in your pocket.
Yeah, I got a liquor say. I'll do a pulled pork, and people go, "Oh my god!" I go, "This literally, I just sat at home and drank beer for 8 hours. Like it was fine." But brisket's like the mount.
Brisket's like the calculus of high school,
which I failed out of.
which I didn't even get.
Yeah, I went. Did I get into college? Okay, I'm out of calculus. So. During this time, after you got shut down by the city, you launched a Kickstarter campaign.
Yeah, 3 weeks passed.
And were people still hitting you up?
Oh, yeah, every single day. I was like, I'm sorry, dude, I can't, you know. Ray, fuck it, just tell me, just you and me.
Yeah, I'll just come to the house, I'll pay whatever you need.
It feels like they want to keep it super secret, but like, I'll sneak in and you can meet me at the corner. And I was like, no, because at the time I didn't even know where it was, so I didn't want to take the risk.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't a neighbor, because if it was a neighbor, they would have snitched on me
years ago.
A long time ago.
Yeah, but if it was a neighbor, no, it had to be someone
from Facebook.
From Facebook, because anyone who loved your food wouldn't have jeopardized what you were doing.
Yes, but now I thank the hater.
Yeah.
I said it out loud publicly. On one of my videos when I first opened up, I was like, hey, thank you, hater.
Yeah. So you did the Kickstarter.
Yes.
And that didn't go.
No, the Kickstarter was, the city had hired, so once I got to the son, the inspector, the main building safety code inspector told me, he's like, dude, this is just a warning. You know, I'm not giving you a ticket or anything, but I'm going to give you a little advice. I go, what's up? I'm thinking he's going to throw a book at me. Go to the city, tell him what you got going on. Pretty sure they can help you. I'm like, yeah, right. How are you gonna help you? So I went into the city next Monday, because this happened over the weekend.
Yeah.
I want to speak to somebody about my case. Hey, speak with the city planning. City planning heard my case. They liked it. They spoke to financial director. Finance director. His name was Julio at that time. He's like, dude, I want you in my city. I want you to stay here. I'm gonna help you open up. I'm gonna hire a guy to do a business plan for you. We'll pay for it. I was like, but I don't even have money to open up a shop. I was like, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. Well, you know, the money to open up the shop never came, but he gave me something a lot more valuable than money. He gave me the motivation. He gave me the light that I didn't have. He's like, you're gonna be successful with the barbecue. I was like, okay, if you say so.
That's so awesome. And so, I mean, was that, I mean, obviously, your success was founded by the community, but by the government helping you stay in the community, I feel like that's been like a big fire and big push to your success.
Yeah, because you got to remember that. I mean, I'm selling out of my house. You never hear a story where you go to the city and you tell them, I'm selling food out of my house. Can you help me open up a restaurant? No, it doesn't happen. I haven't met nobody yet.
No, they go, yeah, no.
They go pay your fine. You're lucky you didn't get fined. In my case, you're lucky you didn't get fined. No, don't do it again.
But you did it again.
I had to. And they knew I was doing it again because they were seeing my ads on Facebook.
And they were then getting in line and eating your...
Yeah, and now they're some of my best customers.
Yeah.
No, in reality, they are some of my best customers.
So you opened it again, and then did you get shut down again?
I opened it again. I opened it again.
And were people like just over so pumped?
Yeah, but it took a while to get shut down. So now we're talking first week of March is when I got shut down the first time.
2014.
I restarted in last weekend of March, which was 3 weeks after.
That's fine.
I didn't get shut down the second time until first weekend of August.
All right, so they let people have a little bit of a summertime barbecue.
But I wasn't cooking as much. I was maybe cooking once a month.
Okay, and just
I was scared. I was honestly legit scared. I didn't know what the outcome was if I got caught again.
But all this time you're building toward the legit business,
right? At
that
time I'm building my mom. My mom let me borrow some money. I was selling all my Traegers. I was selling pretty much everything that I could to make money to buy equipment, used equipment from Craigslist, of course.
So, and at this time, you're working to this, and you also made this trip down to Texas, right?
Yeah, actually, that came, no, the trip down to Texas came after I opened up here.
Oh, really?
So Brisket's still not even in the picture.
So you opened up with only...
I opened up with pulled pork nachos, pulled pork sandwiches, and ribs. Three items.
That's it.
And that kept me alive for over a year and change.
And what was the response when you opened? How hard was it to open this place?
It was easy in the sense that it used to be a pizza place. So most of the stuff was already here.
So all the ventilation and everything.
Yeah, the ventilation. It was easy because the guy who was here before had only opened for a couple months and did all the renovations and everything. All I did was pretty much just clean it up.
And he just went out of business?
It was a Cuban restaurant and it just didn't work out.
Didn't work.
But I went online. I figured out how to do the plan check for the health department. I figured out how to do the drawings with one of my wife's best friend's son helped me. He was studying engineering at the time, so him and his engineering software. We did a Mickey Mouse 1 page 8x10
beautiful
drawing. Health department was like, they didn't like it at first, but then once they got to know me, they were helping me fix this and fix that, and we'll approve it.
It's so funny how, and this goes to your personality, it's just like, wow, like people will really help you once they see that you're passionate and authentic, and it's not just about it. So you opened up, Brisket still...
Not even close.
And then what? You went to Texas because you're just like, I got to go see what the barbecue is.
You know what, to be honest with you, between you and I and a couple of people that I know of, I wasn't happy with pulled pork.
Hmm.
Pulled pork was there. I enjoyed it, but I just wasn't happy. I knew something was missing in the whole scenario. I was afraid of brisket. I had done it a couple times at my house, but it was still scary. You're talking spending, at that time, no matter how cheap, $60 on a chunk of meat. That's so easy to screw up. And yet alone even figure it out. And then you watch these videos on YouTube and they say $2.75 and it's a bunch of baloney. It's not $2.75. And do this and do it. It's like everything they tell you on YouTube or you read books, it's backwards. It's the opposite. Hmm. Because if I were to do briskets at $2.75 like some of these people do it, and for 16 hours, those things would be charcoal.
Yeah, be nothing. Be You just use that to cook your next piece of meat.
Yeah, it's like sometimes you watch these shows and videos, I would do that at $2.75. It's like, really, dude, you did $2.75, So I figured it out, and that's what kept me scared. But then I told my wife, I was like, we need to bring brisket. But first, I need to go try the real stuff. I need to make the trip.
Yeah.
I told her, it's June, July, I forgot what time it is. It's slow. Let's just drive for a weekend. First thing we did, nonstop, we drove 28 hours, 29 hours. We drove straight to Franklin's Barbecue.
It's a good stop. Shout out to Aaron Franklin.
Yes.
And I think, and we were saying that I think he's the one who sort of put brisket in the mainstream in many ways.
And he inspires millions of us.
I know.
If you're in barbecue and you're doing brisket, he's definitely one of your top two idols.
Who's the other one?
To be honest with you, what's that millionaire guy that's always popping up doing events on for charity.
Adam Perry Lane.
Yes, that one.
He's great. Daisy Mays is. Yeah.
But the problem is that you can't try his barbecue because he's never.
He never tried. He just it's this
bingo. So.
I mean, I used to live in New York, and so I would go to that. But it's also a pain. It's like Midtown West Side. It's a pain. So, how much tip? How much insight did he give you on?
No, him nothing. Him
no, but Aaron Franklin.
No, Aaron Franklin, nothing. No, Aaron Franklin was just, I got lucky, I met him, I complimented him on his work. It was more tips from the pit masters. You know, it was more like, I think a lot of times they don't necessarily have to tell you things, but you notice them. You notice by, you know, when they give you the tour and you notice the gauges.
Well, you have to know what to look for.
Yes, and I knew what
you knew to look for.
Yes.
Now I heard a rumor that you did some dumpster diving to get some secrets.
Yes, I did. I got pictures of it too. But I wouldn't call it dumpster diving. Over there in Texas, seems like everybody just has open freely where you eat and where the trash cans are at. So, what's the best way for you to find out what somebody else is cooking or is? When you go dump your trash, obviously, if you happen to get lucky, you're going to see the boxes that they're throwing away. Those boxes are going to say whatever, you know, biscuit, you know, brand or whatever. So obviously there you know that, hey, you know what? This particular person is using this kind of brand. With Aaron Franklin's case, he's very proud and to open and say he uses Creekstone.
Oh, yeah.
And there wasn't no dipshit. The question is what kind of Creekstone brand he's using, because you know there's the premium Black Angus, there's the All Natural, there's the GMO. But I think at the end of the day, whether it's the Creekstone Premium Natural or whether it's the All Natural or the GMO, I think Creekstone by itself is so well refined that you can't go wrong with any one of those three. And I found that out because I already used all those three. And I started, now you take in mind that When I saw Creekstone, it was the first thing I did. Well, if Aaron Franklin's using it, he's probably using the most expensive one there is. So I went and I bought the most expensive one. So this is awesome. And then I tried the regular, the premium black. It's still just as awesome. So now either one of those is just as good as the other.
Right. So you brought what you learned back to the restaurant. And how long did it take you to get your brisket to a point where now it's adorning all the walls in the photos, you know, and sort of what is you've become known for with your, like, brisket?
I'd say about 9 months.
8 months?
Eight to nine months.
How was, what was the one where you sort of, I guess, where you knew that, like, you had gotten it?
Yeah.
Or was you, like, or did you know that, like, it got up to a good enough point,
where you felt comfortable, where you won't be embarrassed?
Right.
Where you won't be embarrassed to get that person from Texas and then have them tell you, oh, dude, this is horrible. This is California crap. No, it was more like, okay, now if I get somebody from Texas, I'm sure they'll be happy.
I had it. Yeah. I've had it, and I'm very happy.
And I think another part of it is, you know what? I tell everybody who asks me, it's like, it's still not done, you know. And even if you ask Aaron Franklin,
that's the thing. It's like it's the next one's always the best one. Like it's 30 years. I mean, right? You're just always improving.
I remember an interview that they did on Franklin on YouTube. He has a whole bunch. But I remember one specifically where they asked him, "Was like, do you think your brisket, the way you're cooking it now, tastes as good as when you first opened up?" He's like, "No. It's like it's been evolving since day one." And I think that's the fun part about brisket, is that, yes, it's just salt, and yes, it's just pepper, and yes, it's just oak wood. But there's so many factors and variables that go in between that little change of degree completely alters the whole outcome.
Is that the biggest? I mean, is the cooking method the biggest X factor of it all?
Yes. So it's not so much, so the brand of the meat is one thing. Now, what I found out that does, it keeps you consistent.
Sure.
It keeps you in a sense where it's you'll have that same looking brisket all the time. You'll have the same look, same texture, same everything. But then, when you that's what I love about Creekstone. It'll always taste the same.
Now, you are known for one particular dish that's sort of become a cult favorite, which is the mac and cheese brisket burrito.
Yes. How did I come up with that one?
Yeah.
I wasn't high.
For the record, I wasn't high.
Because that's the first question that people ask me. Ray, did you have the munchies when you had weed?
I mean, that definitely falls in that, like, gourmet stoner type of food.
Yes.
Because you're still putting this amazing 16-hour brisket in with this mac and cheese and a flour tortilla.
Unaltered, yeah. Just cut it, chop it 1, 2, 3 times, put it in with the mac and cheese. No barbecue sauce whatsoever, just mac and cheese, the sausage from Texas, beans that we make here from scratch, roll it all up, and you add your own barbecue sauce on the side.
But you're Texas, so it's, I mean, you could do dry, right?
Yeah.
You have barbecue sauce just for people who want it, but you don't need
just because we're going back to the California thing, here in California, unfortunately, we've been, since day one, infused that barbecue has to have barbecue sauce on top, or if not a whole bunch, that we wouldn't know better. And I think it's going to take years before people start realizing that it's on the side.
Yeah. I was in crisis in Lockhart years ago with someone, and I asked for barbecue sauce, and my friend with me went, no. And I went, oh. So before we go, I want to ask, future Raised Barbecue, what can people expect?
Honestly, one location. I think if anything, eventually down the road, just within the same city, whether it's Huntington Park or Vernon, but definitely no second location, because I totally understand all the big pit masters and the big people that have been in business for years, why they only have one location. Because, you know, just what they say, you know, you cannot replicate in one location in a second one, because you would need to clone yourself.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
Congratulations.
Thank you for telling your story.
Pleasure.
And if people want to follow you, because you have a good Instagram too.
Yeah, it's Rays BBQHP. That's Rays BBQHP. HP for Huntington Park. Facebook I don't really use too much, but it's still Rays BBQHP. But it's mostly Instagram.
All right. And keep up the good work.
Well, thanks, and we'll keep on evolving.
Awesome. Well, this is one of our favorite bands. This is Small Black here on Snacky Tunes, coming to you live from Huntington Park. Thank you.
Today's program is proudly brought to you by Whole Foods Market, America's healthiest grocery store with more than 400 locations throughout the United States. Download the Whole Foods Market app on your smartphone for recipes, sales, information, and digital coupons. Or visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to find a store closest to you.
Welcome back. We have Harsh Crowd live in studio. Do you want to go around and introduce yourselves?
Yeah, sure.
And the instrument that you play?
I'm Dea, and I play guitar.
Okay.
I'm Willow, and I sing vocalist.
I'm Lena, I play the drums.
I'm Rihanna, and I play the bass and piano.
So why don't you tell people how you met?
Who wants to go?
Rihanna should.
Why don't you?
Okay.
Tell us a good origin story.
All met at Willie Mae Rock Camp for Girls. We were put into a band. Okay, and we were, you know, put into a band and...
Basically, we all went to the same camp, which was Willie Mae Rock Camp for Girls.
Yeah.
And we just randomly were jumbled together into a group, and we formed a band, and we spent that whole week creating a song, and we actually created two songs, and so we weren't supposed to, and we figured a way how to morph them together, and then... We kind of just stuck to it afterwards, and it's 3 years later? Yeah.
For listeners who don't know, what is the Willie Mae Rock Camp for Girls?
The Willie Mae Rock... Wait, Rihanna, did you want to...
No.
Okay. The Willie Mae Rock Camp for Girls is the camp that we have all gone to. It's a rock... It's like a camp for girls, only girls. It's like about women's empowerment and... being a woman in the world of rock and roll, and it's kind of all about empowering girls to do whatever they want, and like, you know, it's like to say girls can do whatever guys can do and just as well, and yes. That's kind of like the whole atmosphere of the rock camp, and so it's for girls 8 to 18, and they put you up in random bands, and for a week you like... You go to workshops in the morning and the afternoon, like, about empowerment and stuff. And then after lunch, you have band practice, which is where you get into these bands that they put you in. And you practice for a week, and at the end of the week, you do this big show for, like, a song you wrote.
And you didn't know each other before, so what brought each of you to the rock camp?
Oh, man. I personally have been going since I was 8, and... I knew about it since I was, like, 6, and I was just waiting until I turned 8. And then I finally turned 8, and I was like, yes, I can go. And I've gone ever since I was 8, and I'm 14 now.
Okay.
Yeah, me too. I've gone ever since I was 8, and I just thought it was a really great idea to go, even when I was younger, because I hadn't played an instrument before, and it was a really great way to start playing drums, because I didn't take any lessons or anything before that, and actually the camp was the thing that started... you know, my whole drumming life, which is my whole life now. And, you know, ever since I was little, I loved music, so it was a perfect fit for us.
This is Rihanna, and I just went when I was, like, 8, 9, and it, like, helped me with my confidence, and it helped me play the piano better, and then I picked up the bass. Yeah.
And now you're fabulous.
Yeah.
What wins over now, the bass or the piano?
Well, I've played the piano since I was 4, but...
You're really good at both.
Yeah. I can't pick...
She's like a prodigy.
She's amazing at everything
she
picks up.
At the same time, like, it's crazy.
And Willow, what brought you to Willie Mae?
My mom signed me up, and I was like, I'd rather sit at home and watch TV. But then I went, and I was like, this is pretty cool. And I actually signed up for guitar.
Yeah, we all signed up for different instruments. Yeah.
I signed up for guitar, but they put me in vocal. I was really pissed. But then got to be with you fabulous people. So yeah. It's okay.
So you mentioned that it teaches about confidence and kind of like what girls can do in the rock and roll world. What are some of the lessons or kind of ideas that you've landed upon since being in the rock camp?
Well, I think for us, yeah, we've all kind of learned that no matter what you do or if you mess up or if you make a mistake, you rock no matter what. And that's something that you're taught to say whenever you make a mistake is I rock, because it really gives you empowerment even when you mess up.
Every time you make a mistake.
Okay. We still say it to this day. And so I think that's really awesome, because then you don't feel bad about messing up and you have more room to just kind of play around. And that's a big lesson for me.
Yeah, the biggest thing that rock camp taught me was that age and gender are not important to the music industry at all. Because when I was little, I like always dreamed of being in a band, but when I looked forward, I thought that it would be when I was at least like 18 or something, and here I am, 14, playing drums in Harsh Crowd, which started when we were 11. And there are some conflicts that happen, you know, in the music industry where we're not taken as seriously. Or, you know, there's, you know, this is a sexist world sometimes, but rock camp teaches us that that's nothing to bring us down, and that's nothing to stop us, because we can do it either way. So
yeah, we've been 12 for like 3 years.
Yeah.
let's hear a song.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. What are you gonna? Well, let you all get set up. But what are you gonna play for us?
So
first?
Our first song that we're gonna play is called 10 Degrees, and it's kind of like a remastered version of the original one.
Okay.
We wrote, so.
All right. Well, we'll let you get set up, and then we will have Harsh Crowd live on Snacky Tunes.
Nowhere to run, nowhere to play. I don't know you, but you know me. We could have been something to see. You're really nice, but I just can't. You're so damn sweet, but there's no chance I like you. So you just don't know what about me. You're really nice, but I just can't. You're so damn sweet, but there's no chance I like you. So you just don't know what about me. I thought there was a spark with us. Now who am I supposed to trust? You wanted her instead of me, so now we're ancient history. You're so damn sweet, but there's no chance I like you. So you just don't know what about me. You're really nice, but I just can't. You're so damn sweet, but there's no chance I like you. So you just don't know what about me. You put me under so much stress. You get your part and I get less. I try my hardest, do my best. That's why I'm you're really nice, but I just can't. You're so damn sweet, but there's no chance I like you. So you just don't know what about me. You're really nice, but I just can't. You're so damn sweet, but there's no chance I like you. So you just don't know what about me. You're really nice, but I just can't. You're so damn sweet, but there's no chance I like you. So you just don't know what about me.
So how has, as you've all kind of learned new instruments or picked up different ones, how has the songwriting process evolved while still being in the camp?
Oh, man. We have switched instruments around. We've written songs and we've thrown them away. We've really, in the past couple of years, we've really, you know, changed, and our writing process has changed. And so I think, you know, as you get older, you have different influences and you, like, listen to different types of music. So I think if you look at the past couple of years we've had, that really reflects that.
Who are your influences?
I think it varies with, like, the different... but as a collective group, I think we've really been influenced by a lot of different bands. But one in particular, I think, is this band called Le Tigre. We did a cover of them
Joan
when
Jett.
We first started. Yeah.
Oh, The Police, definitely a big one.
The funny thing is we all have such different music tastes outside of the band. But then when we come together, we have, like, the same music taste and it all, like... reflects on our music. Like, for me, my biggest influence, and everyone knows this, is that I'm obsessed with David Bowie. It's like the rock ballads, The Who, all that. And then Willow, you know, you have your
I'm more like indie like really slow
and really sad music.
Any bands in particular?
Right now I just got really into a band called Bad Books, which is really good. And I don't know. I also like some of those really, like, kind of, like, trash funk, like, 21 Pilots.
But, yeah, it all comes together in our music. So,
do you feel that the harsh crowd sound is still evolving?
Definitely.
The jazz. We did this jazz thing.
Yeah, we experiment a lot with that. And, you know, we started off kind of, like, poppy, and then we had this conflict in the middle where we could, like, we were only writing slow songs, and we were like, where's the rock and roll?
We were,
like,
in a rut.
We're losing it. And then we started Don't Ask Me, which we're going to play later. And that was, like, the start of our new sound. And I think it's a lot more, like, fun and, like, upbeat now and more punk from when it was when we first started.
Yeah, Don't Ask Me is the name of our EP that just came out over the summer. And I think that really... captures, you know, where we were, like, in that time, because our next EP is going to be completely different. So each, it's like little time capsules of what we're into at the moment.
I mean, being in the camp is really interesting because, you know, bands that don't have access to that, they're just kind of pushing themselves. But how does being in the camp or does it push you or force you to evolve or look at different things, or how does it help or hinder being in the band?
Oh, definitely it does. I mean, being in my band, Lena and I think we were the only ones. We went to camp after we, like, kind of, like, grew Harsh Crowd. And I think it just made me see how talented people really are. And, like, just, like, it made me want to get better because I saw all these kids that were, like, so amazing. And, like, I just felt really, really humbled. And I was, like, now I need to get better so that I can represent these people and... take my opportunities and, you know, make our band great.
Yeah, when we're performing, we're representing the rock camp. So we're representing all the things it speaks, which is really, really important because the message the rock camp brings out is really, really spectacular. And it's something that should really be spread to everyone. So that's part of our goal when we're doing interviews, when we're doing performances, like, to make sure that we, like, as a band and our songs are just bringing that message out in itself, but also to speak of it as well.
Yeah. Without camp, I don't even know where I would be right now.
So, oh, man.
Like, I can't imagine watching Netflix. What I would be doing right now.
I mean, and what do you see? I mean, you spoke of confidence, but do you see it affecting people at different ages, like the 8-year-olds versus the 12-year-olds, the 18-year-olds? Do you see that it spreads the same message, or how does it affect, and especially for you as you move through it through different ages, how does, you know, what lessons are you taking from it that you might not have seen at first?
I think it's really, really interesting to go to camp because you see 8-year-olds and then you see 18-year-olds and they interact and they're learning the same things and they're kind of going through the same process. So everybody's kind of really doing the same thing. So it really doesn't, like I've learned, it doesn't matter what your age is because I've created friends at camp who are 10 years older than me. Like I don't think the age affects anybody because you're so unified. The camp just brings everybody together so intensely and the counselors and everybody is just like, you become a family within the week. And so the camp really just unifies everyone.
Yeah, I mean, also, though, I feel like when you're, like, 8, it's really about, like, having fun and being in that band and being like, oh, my God, I'm in a band. But then when you get older, you kind of, like, when I was little, when I was 8 and going to camp, I was like, oh, my God, these workshops are so boring.
Yeah.
But then, like, when you get older, you start, like, really appreciating the message that camp has while also, like, having so much fun and being like, oh, my God, I'm in a band. But also you learn stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun to, like, since I went when I was 8, and I went when I was, like, 10 and 11, I think, and then 11 was when we formed the band, and then I went, I think, last summer. I don't remember, but, you know, after I was a teenager. So, like, there was all these different, like, periods of time where I was a different age, and, yeah, I definitely agree with Willow with that, where it kind of changes your mindset, but starting at 8 years old, the confidence is there. It's probably, like, that's where you get your confidence, right there. Like, that was the first time I performed on a, like, real stage, and it was, like, something incredible, and it hadn't, like, just the thought of, like, oh my god, I'm playing in a band, yeah. I'm, like, making music. Even now, I'm like, oh my god, I'm playing in a band, and I'm making music. So, it's the same thing, but yeah, I definitely agree, the appreciation for, like, feminism and what we're doing and, like, why we're playing here and why we're in a band right now, that's grown over the years.
Amazing. Can we hear another song?
Yeah.
All right, what's this one?
We're going to play Grim.
Okay.
Newer song.
Great.
She's running through the forest. Run faster, she's got a lot for us. She can't go home too quick. Wolf's hungry, he hasn't eaten all day. Follow her, she's getting away. She knows she's got no time to waste. For us, whoa, she's too grim for you, whoa, oh, she's in the forest, and whoa, she's coming for us, whoa, she's too grim for you, whoa. Jack the Nimble, Jack the Quick, climb up your green candlestick. You're running out, but he's too slick. Jack's got your things, he's robbed your house. But you're too slow and he's gotten out. That giant's got one big bone to pick. And oh, she's in the forest. And oh, she's coming for us. Up in your hill, don't waste your time. No, don't stand still. I'm falling fast. I can't stand up. We're two, but soon we could be one. And mom and dad don't want us home. And Jill, she's stuck inside a hole. And Jack, he's really down on his luck. And
your next EP is coming out. what is the process that is going into that and how it will differ from the one that you mentioned that came out this past summer?
A lot of recording.
For our last EP, we recorded at over, I think, 3 different places because we were just trying to feel for, like, the right sound that we wanted for the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But for this next one, I think we really have an idea of, like, what we're really looking at. And so we have the songs, and I think we just want to dive headfirst. Like, we found our recording place that we really love, and so that's...
Where is it?
Take it away, Lena.
Oh, Lena's uncle.
So, yeah, my whole family is kind of like a big part of this band. Like, my dad's like a dance mom, but band dad. And my uncle has always been... Yeah, I'm just getting the middle finger from my dad right now. My uncle has always been a really great musician. So he has his own music studio in his basement. And it has, like, a bunch of cool things. And he's great at, like, mixing everything. And so, yeah, that's a great... It's recording is so crazy. There's so many different things that come into it. It's not just, like, playing, and then you record it on your phone, and then there it is. It's, like, you know, the bass track, and then the lyrics, and all this crazy stuff. And the most important thing about recording is that you cannot be shy about your sound and what you want. So whoever is working with you, you really have to be clear on what you want it to be, because it's like it's your final masterpiece. Like, that's what you're bringing out to people. So you have to, like, make sure you're comfortable with telling them, oh, like, could you turn this down? Yeah. I would rather have this. So I think it's going to be a lot easier to open up this time, because we weren't really used to that the first time. And now I think we'll be more comfortable with really expressing what we want. So I think that's going to be a great experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely going to bring more cough drops this time.
Yeah. It's also just so fun because we get to go upstate, and we just get to kind of hang out and really enjoy each other's company while we create this really interesting thing that everybody will get to hear soon. So
yeah, in the recording you have to, like, do, like, 3 different bass tracks and 3 different guitar tracks, and then do it over and over again just to make sure it's right.
Mm-hmm. So we now know.
How do you balance all of this with school?
Oh my gosh.
It's a lot of scheduling. Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's a good question just based on, like, other kids who are looking up to you about how to make it happen.
It's totally a great question.
A big band conflict is, like, scheduling. Like, a lot of bands have conflicts with different people's schedules, but the good thing is weekends are a thing, so weekends are, like, all busy.
Saturday is Harsh Crowd's day.
Yeah, so Saturday, that's it. And then when it comes to gigs, there's a lot of times where we played gigs on school nights and stuff, which was, I'm not complaining at all, but yeah, it does sometimes interfere with school. Like, I don't think any of us would have a problem with leaving school early for a gig.
No.
Coming to school late for something, but it all depends on what the... You know,
it's possible.
It all has to do with cooperation and, you know, working together and stuff. But yeah, it could be a conflict sometimes.
Yeah, but, like, yeah. I mean, for bands that are starting out, you might, like, look at it and be like, oh my god, this is so much time that I'm gonna spend with these people and I'm gonna die. But it's like, when you actually go into it, I mean, for some of us, like Rihanna, it's like a lot of time.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not like. Like, we love each other, and we love being in this band, so it's not a pain to put in the time.
Yeah, like, it's really rewarding at the end, like, to be able to play our music and show it to people and to record. Like, it's all worth it because, you know, even just playing together in rehearsal is rewarding because it's like, here we are and we're making music together. So it's really, like, you have to be passionate about it. Like, you can't just show up, like, as if it's school and be like, oh, whatever. But if you really love music and you love the people you're working with, then it's great.
She speaks the truth.
I want to make sure we get one more song in, but is there any type of wisdom or insight that you would impart to future all-girl bands that you have learned from your 3 years of being in Harsh Crowd and with the rock camp that you could, you know, share to someone who's just picking up the bass or sticks for the first time?
I would say just do it.
Yeah.
Just dive in.
Don't be afraid to say what you want to say. And,
be yourself, because, like, I mean, if you're going to be in a band, you might as well be the full you. Like, I'm really, really, really weird.
Crazy.
And crazy, as they can all tell. But I just say be yourself and do what you love.
I would say don't let anyone call you a girl band or a child band. That's not a compliment. Even if you like the people saying, like, oh, you're really great for a girl band or for a kid band. Like, I wouldn't say, like, punch them in the face, but make sure, or maybe you, oh, maybe you could, if that's the way you want to go, then that's cool, but don't let that happen, because if you want to be in a girl band and you just want to make music and you're all girls, then it's not a girl band. It's not a boy band. It's not a girl band. It's just a band, and just because you happen to be girls, all girls, some girls, then that's it. Then it's just a band, so don't let people say that about you.
That is great. I think, well, before we go to the last song, where can people find your first EP? Where can people get all the information?
You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Bandcamp, Music. Amazon, Apple Music. Music. Yeah, pretty much everywhere.
And do you have a website, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat?
Yeah, all social media.
With all the social media. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Follow us on Instagram.
Follow us. Look us up.
Okay.
Don't be strangers.
Well, thank you for coming by.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Cool. Pizza party after this.
Yeah.
That's why most bands come anyway.
What is the last song that you're going to play for us?
The last song we are going to play is the name of our EP, and it's called Don't Ask Me.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for listening, and we will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes.
One, two, three, four. You come around and ask me, saying that you need to know. I give you everything, you keep it all to yourself. That's why I'm never giving you all my advice. You do the opposite, don't even look back to me. Don't let me go.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.